with us in studio now is Jim Carroll. We're going to go into another of his series focusing on significant and influential record labels in music history. Tonight it's the turn of XL Records, home to some of the most groundbreaking underground dance music throughout the 1990s. More recently, home to household names such as Adele, Dizzy Rascal and the White Stripes. Let's start with a sample of their earliest music wares that might take some listeners right back in time. One. SL2 on a Ragga Trip, an early hit and one of the most influential independent record companies of this century so far. XL Records, Jim Carroll, as I said, here to speak to us about it. I suppose, Jim, oftentimes it's the environment, the social environment, the business environment in which a record company crops up that tells us a lot about them.
Yeah,
true. How did XL drop start out? What was the context, social and economic, please, Jim?
Well, let's start with the infrastructural context, Sean, more than that else. They started in a photocopying room in the in Beggar's Banquet in Wandsworth in South London. Beggar's Banquet is a big label, and it had at the time it had a kind of a dance offshoot, and you had two guys. The dance offshoot was called City Beat, and there's two guys, Tim Palmer and Nick Hawkes, and
so they were talking about.
Yeah, they were working there, and they said we can put together a label that is a lot less commercial in some ways than City Beat, and City Beat would be non-commercial to begin with. So that's where XL started. They released loads of sort of one-off tracks. Tracks like on the Ragga Tips you just played, Johnny L's I'm Leaving, and a track by the duo to go under the name of Kicks Like a Mule, a track called The Bouncer. And the duo was basically one of them was Nick Hawkes, who set up XL, and there was a guy called Richard Russell, and Richard Russell was Hawkes' DJing partner. So Russell came on board via this release, and he joined the boys in the photocopy room, and he basically became XL Records. You know, like eventually, like the two boys left and went on elsewhere, but Russell stayed around, and basically it's Richard Russell who kind of like they took XL from what was basically a kind of a let's be honest, it was a sort of moving and shaking label. It was a label that kind of like moved ducking and diving a little bit, releasing one-off singles, probably selling them from the boot of a car on occasion, but like, I mean, building up a kind of a repertoire of ephemeral dance music. That's what
I was
doing.
Going to ask you, well, explain to me what you mean then by ephemeral dance music, because I mean on a Ragga Trip is get out on the floor and it's, dance.
Yeah, but what I mean by ephemeral, Sean, is that like, I mean, if basically SL2 walked into the studio right now, would we recognise them? No, we wouldn't. Like, I mean, ephemeral means they were just like, they were one-off dance singles. If you got two or three out of them, you were doing really, really well. So just one-off dance singles. Get in, like, I mean, make a bit of noise. Like, I mean, sell at that stage thousands and thousands
of records. And that's what I'm going to say. Were they making money?
Of course they were making money. I mean, this was like, I mean, the early 1990s. Record labels were still in their prime. People were buying records, so they were buying vinyl, and they were buying kind of pieces of plastic called CDs. So they were making money. But there was no long-term thinking, and that's where Russell came in. And the genius of Richard Russell was that, like, he kind of realised that he had the perfect ingredients. Dance music was kicking off. People were beginning to kind of realise, okay, it's time there's something else in dance music other than that ephemeral kind of like one-off euphoric kick in a nightclub. And he was looking around, and he could probably say, well, I saw it coming, but no, he didn't really. You're looking for an act who can take you from the nightclub to the arena to the festival headliner, and along came this act.
Well, why don't we just play the act that came along, will we?
We'll play him.
You are going to get me arrow on top.
We'll tell people who they are?
No, let them work it out as they listen. I was asking you to tell me again, Jim Carroll, as we were listening to that. Where were the three places you said? You said from the nightclub.
From the nightclub to the arena
to the festival field. And you can hear in The Prodigy was who we were listening to there, and Break and Enter. You can hear the quality in that music that it could be in any of those three places.
Absolutely. And like, you know, I remember the very first time I saw Prodigy was playing in the front square of Trinity College at Trinity Bowl in 1991 and 1992. And even then, they just had that amazing energy. And what happened then was they got confidence. And once an act gets confidence, and And once an act has a backer like Richard Russell and XL Records, who'll allow them basically exploit their artistic creativity, who'll allow them to exploit their creative control, they can go anywhere.
And was Russell then, he was this way, he saw the long game, I suppose, is what you're saying there. Was the Prodigy the first band that he saw this with? Yes. Did he begin to see others that could be moulded in that fashion?
Totally. What happened basically was, like, I mean, the Prodigy, like, you know, he could see with the Prodigy how you build a career. And what happened is the success of the Prodigy attracted other acts. And the acts who were attracted to XL were, like, they were really interesting because they were acts who were groundbreaking. They were acts who took, like, I mean, non-mainstream music into the mainstream. With the Prodigy, they took electronic rave music and they made it a kind of like a mainstream pop sound. He had bands, he had acts like Basement Jacks, who, like, I mean, created this amazing carnival-esque sound of house and everything else.
Yeah, we're kind of into the early noughties now.
Yeah, Dizzy Rascal, who brought grime into the mainstream. Well, but the interesting part then with kind of like, I suppose, XL was that all those acts we've kind of mentioned to date are all kind of like, they're based on the groove. They're based kind of like the electronic acts. Then they suddenly start attracting bands like the White Stripes, you know, who were, like, I mean, a massive band for them. Mm. Vampire Weekend. They were, like, you know, they were acts coming on of that particular ilk. And then as years went on, XL got to have this reputation as somewhere, as an artist-friendly home. And the artists who wanted kind of like, who were a bit different were coming there. I mean, three acts who kind of like, I suppose, signed to XL in later years are a good example of this. Radiohead, after they left EMI, they set themselves up independently. They wanted someone to look after nuts and bolts releasing records. They called Richard Russell. Gil Scott Heron and Bobby Womack, two acts who'd been, like, seen it all during their careers. Mm. Their very last studio records were released and produced by Richard Russell. And, like, it's amazing the way they kind of came on. But the act, I suppose, who kind of, like me, I suppose, summed up an awful lot for XL and who made the most money for XL is an act who's no longer with them. She released three albums on the label. She released an album called 19, an album called 21, and an album called 25. And her name was Adele. I mean, she's, in many ways, she's a million miles removed from the Prodigy we played earlier on. But in many ways, she's very, very connected. Because, again, it's about a long game, Sean.
I suppose the Gil Scott Heron, Bobby Womack, Final Records type of thing links you in some ways into Adele. But did they know, did they know the cha-ching that Adele was going to be for them?
Are you joking me? I mean, like, you know, the first time she came over to Dublin to do promo, she did promo in Brooks Hotel on Drury Street. And it's one of the few interviewees where she ever happily made tea for every single member of the unshaven and unwashed Dublin media pack. You know, you had no idea that was going to take off. No one had any idea it was going to take off. You know, I mean, Jonathan Dickens, her manager, may well kind of, like, mean say, oh yeah, he knew what was kind of happening. You can never guess. You never know what's going on. Again, it was about giving her the space to become that artist.
Well, they had her. They had the money that they made from her. Okay, only three records, but they were three hugely successful records.
They're three records that are going to sell forever more, Sean. Yeah. I mean, even though she's now moved on to Sony, she got a £90 million deal with Sony. She moved on to Sony. The three records will remain with XL, so they'll make millions.
There's probably a little bit coming back to XL, even from the Sony stuff. Well, we don't know the details, but what I wanted know is then, are they still going as strong as ever, or what has gone wrong if something has gone wrong?
No, absolutely. They're still going as strong as ever. I mean, they're still releasing records, but they don't release many records. The secret of Richard Russell's success is the fact that he realised you don't have to work like a major label and throw dozens of records at the wall every year. Stick to six albums, make sure they're the right six albums, give them the space, give them the love, give them the kind of, like, I mean, the width and depth they need to kind of, like, explore, and that's what works.
All right, less is more, even less though the more. Name is XL. There you go. Let's finish up with a little bit of Adele, Chasing Pavements. But it did lead somewhere. Chasing Pavement, certainly musically for Adele, and that is one of the records released on the XL Records label that Jim Carroll was speaking to us about this evening.